Broadcasting on 13 stations around the world. Wherever you are never far away. This is the Bondi Tunes Radio Network.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting on FM in Australia and New Zealand, and a warm welcome to our listeners around the world. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent and joins me now from Brisbane in Queensland. Entertainment reporter...
Hi, Henry.
Entertainment reporter Rachel Bernstein also joins me from... Hang on a sec. I just need to check with my producer. Oh, her name is Rachel Brunston.
Ah, that's
are you
hilarious.
Are you sure she's in Melbourne?
Rachel Bernstein, I love it.
Well, Rachel Bernstein, it was so funny. That poor guy.
I just want to explain to our audience that you've been making appearances on Britain's Talk TV, and it's very bad of me to be critical, but they didn't only get your name wrong the first interview, but they got it wrong in the second interview as well.
It's funny because it's actually written correctly, but he keeps rushing and mispronouncing it, and he's now discovered this, that he's done this twice, and he's beyond horrified with himself, and poor guy. I'm like, don't even worry about it. Like, it's okay. And the only reason, and I told them the second time, and the only reason why I brought it up was because if I keep going, it's going to be too late to bring it up.
Yes.
So it becomes just awkward and strange. So I had to do it because I'll turn around to just about anything you call me. But the first time they actually got my geography completely wrong. They said, you're in Brisbane. And I said, I haven't been to Brisbane in about 15 years, but that's okay. They're like, oh, where are you living? I'm at Melbourne. And the second time he said, so we got it right. You're in Melbourne, right? I went, yeah, I'm in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, thank you, Rachel Bernstein. And I went, oh, okay.
You just have to have a new name, I guess. Just
explain. Well, I like to think of it as, I wish he'd called me Bernstein.
Yeah, but that's,
and then I would be Woodward and Bernstein, and that would be fine.
And you could be Jewish. Just explain what you're doing on this Talk TV in Britain. It looks
Talk
very
TV,
interesting.
It's actually really interesting. It's kind of radio amalgamated with television, and I got invited on because I do Slovakian radio with Dave Rhodes, and he's a producer there.
Oh, I see. Right.
And he said, would you like to come on the show? They want somebody to talk to in Australia. And oddly, they've probably picked the wrong person because they want to talk about politics mostly. And I thought, this is a gig for Adam.
But you were so dumb.
I'm here. I'm available.
I do my research because I don't want to embarrass anybody.
But you were very good. You researched very well. Adam, would you agree?
Absolutely. No, you're a natural. I thought it was very interesting.
I guess it was because I'm a big Albo fan as well, so I had a lot to say. But I made sure that I did my research. So it's all very well to be on the radio where nobody sees you and be a plonker. When they can put a face to a name, even though it's Bernstein, I don't need that hanging on me. And people seem to watch. And now if you YouTube my name, these appearances on Talk TV come up, but slated to be back in the first weekend in July.
Fantastic. Yay. Stuff. Fantastic stuff. It's lovely seeing you on television, and you're very good at it. I for about 6 months I was on television myself back in the 80s on national television as a newscaster. And I hated it. I had to wear a shirt and tie. I had to read one of those roly-poly things.
The teleprompter.
The teleprompter. Mm. And I hated it, so I ran back to radio. Okay.
I wore business up top and jammers on the bottom.
Is that right? Well, you can get away with that. Okay. Now, we've got a lot to talk about, and we might even get some politics into this. The Logies. Now...
the Logies.
You watched the Logies after years on last Sunday night.
I haven't watched it for a million years. And I thought, like, to myself yesterday, I thought, I'll just watch and see what's going on. 90% of the people and the shows I didn't know and hadn't heard of because I don't watch a lot of free-to-air. Mm. But the thing that struck me as interesting, and for our friends overseas who don't know what the Logies are, it's Australian television's Night of Night. It's not really anymore, because now the actors are, because that's film and television. This is kind of the Emmys meets the People's Choice Awards. So there's a bunch of popular awards and there's a bunch of peer-based awards. But all the people who won the big peer-based awards didn't even go. Like they didn't even go. And only one of them sent a video message Actually, two. That's unfair. Two. Jackie Weaver won, and she's in the States, and Anna Torv won, and she's, I think she's also in the States at the moment. But like Richard Roxburgh won, he didn't even turn up. He didn't turn up. He didn't even send a video message.
Is it like the Oscars in the sense that their ratings are going through down the toilet kind of thing?
Oh, incredibly so. And I just thought, you know, this is just become kind of, it was a class, it was nice for them because they haven't had the Logies for a couple of years because of COVID, but so it was kind of a class reunion, I guess, but it was just, why? Like the whole,
I have to say,
it used to be glamorous, didn't it, Adam? Like the Logies used to be glamour and, you know, tuxedos and Bert Newton and, you know, it used to be, and now it's just sort of this kind of, what? Why?
It's a sad leftover of what it used to be.
Yeah, and now they also do it on the tacky Gold Coast, which is just a bit much for me. Sorry, Gold Coast, but but the thing that that really rubbed me the wrong way last night was this complete snub of the fact that Neighbours is ending.
Yes, indeed.
But they did a 30-second montage in between segments of one award and another award. And it wasn't, there was no real pageantry about it. That should have had its own moment. It really should have. That's 37 years of television.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Adam, I just want to ask you, do you watch the Logies every year when it was on?
Look, when I was growing up, I did watch them every year. They were like an event that happened in Australia that people did stay at home on a Sunday night to watch the Logies. That hasn't happened for quite a while for me. Although I have to say I did tune in last night. I did start to watch, and after what seemed like about 45 minutes of Julia Morris's intro dialogue,
That was a bit bleak.
I turned off. I looked at my partner, the long-suffering boyfriend, and I just said, "That's it. I'm done. I'm out of here."
She's usually on point too, so that was disappointing.
I couldn't do it.
Now I just want to get back to Neighbours because, as you mentioned, Rachel, Neighbours has been around for 37 years and was on Channel 10. And maybe that's this, as far as I understand, the Logies are on Channel 9 and they don't like Channel 10. I think that might be the reason that they got kind of snubbed.
No, I don't think it was. I really don't, because they paid homage to all sorts of things last night. And it was
on
like
different channels, right.
Yeah. And so it wasn't that. But it's like, Neighbours has been on a crash course with Oblivion for a while, and it's funded completely out of the UK now.
Yeah. Well, it was.
We don't even pay for it anymore. We don't even pay for it anymore. And then they said, we don't want to pay for this either. And it even wasn't on 10 anymore. It got relegated to Peach.
Yes, which is this sub kind of digital station that no one watches.
But it's sad. It was an institution for a really long time, and many great careers and some who shouldn't have any have been launched on the back of Neighbours. And, like, you know, Margot Robbie is ridiculously famous. Guy Pearce. He won a popular award last night. He didn't show up either. but, you know, everybody's been on Neighbours. Russell Crowe made an appearance on Neighbours.
He did,
Everybody's
yes.
been on Neighbours. Mm. And every actor that I know has been on Neighbours, if they were based in Melbourne. If they're based in Sydney, they've been on Home and Away. But this is an institution.
Right.
This is a show that really cemented itself in the fabric of
society.
Australian television when there wasn't anything else like it. It was either hardcore drama like Brisbane, Cell Block H as it's known elsewhere, or it was, you know, silly comedy sketches.
Now that you mention that, Rachel, you are also on Neighbours and Cell Block H. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I hate bringing this up to you again, but I have to, given that the Logies have, you know, and Neighbours is about to end. Kylie Minogue got her start on Neighbours. And she stole your belt. I have to get you to tell that story again. I'm sorry.
I was doing Neighbours. I was on set, and I was wearing the Erinsborough High School uniform, and I had taken off my civilian gear to get changed into said wardrobe. And she had she was trying on jeans that they'd bought for her. Mm-hmm. First of all, when I was in there, she didn't look at me or say hello or anything. I thought, well, that was just weird. It was rude.
Because
even if you, like, it's like when you're standing in a lift with someone, you sort of nod at them or, you know, give them a glance. But
at least
Annie Jones, Yeah, Annie Jones, who's actually returned to Neighbours and revitalised her role.
Really?
Jane. Yeah.
I loved her. I thought she was so sexy.
She was so sweet that day. She was lovely to me from the get-go. So Kylie not only didn't say hello, but she was just, you know, and she said, I don't like these jeans. You, when you buy new jeans, they stick. She's complaining to the wardrobe.
Was she a big star at this point?
Yeah. They'd gotten married.
The marriage thing.
The Scott and Charlene marriage thing just happened.
I think 16 million people in Britain and 3 million people in Australia watched the marriage.
And now nobody cares. And it's just hilarious. But she said, they stick out at the back when you try new jeans. She's a real bogan too, by the way. They stick out at the back when they try new jeans. And I was like, okay.
She's a bogan.
And I piped up and I said, what you need is a belt. And they didn't have a belt that fit her. She's very small. Mm-hmm. I was the exact same size as her. We're very small people, and I had a belt that I had managed to procure from a market in Sydney, mm-hmm. in Paddington.
Oh.
And it was a belt designed for very small people where it doesn't have to wrap around you seven times.
Yes.
Like it's short belt, and they were hard to come by. And I said, you can borrow this belt, but I'm leaving here at 5 and I want it back. It's my favourite belt.
Okay,
I never saw her or it again.
Now, Neighbours, as we said, is ending in early August. Just to let our listeners know, in Britain, of course, we do know that it was on BBC One for many, many years, and then it moved to the commercial network of Channel 5 in the UK. And as you said, Rach, we weren't paying a cent for this for the last couple of years, and Channel 5 just pulled the plug. They just pulled the plug.
They said, no more. We're not paying for this anymore because nobody's watching it. Once it got relegated to Peach here, I knew that this was not going to...
The death knell.
But I thought, you know, it might go on for a while because they don't tend to cancel long-running shows like that. They just let them go and go and go and go.
Mm.
But I really think that they lost a lot of their punch. Like, everything that made Neighbours special sort of started getting lost and a little bit silly. I mean, who has a tornado in Melbourne?
Is that right?
You know, a plane crash, I get. A fire, I get. An explosion, I get. A tornado, maybe not. And it seems, on the other hand, Home and Away has gotten way more dark. More gritty and way more, you know, it's sort of gone the opposite direction.
And of course,
but I'm really sad about Neighbours ending. I loved Neighbours when I was a kid. I thought it was great.
I just want to mention some stats here. 9,000 episodes, 63 weddings, 20 births and 68 deaths.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that something? Adam, were you a big fan of Neighbours as a kid?
Look, no, not really. I did watch it for a couple of seasons years ago. But that when Natalie Brassenthwaite was in it, I watched, I think, 2 seasons.
She was great in it too. She's awesome.
I've never really been a fan of the show. I never watched it at its peak when Kylie and Jason were in it. I never watched it at that point.
Yeah.
But as you said, 9,000 episodes, 63 weddings, 20 births, 68 deaths. It's pretty amazing stuff. And let's not forget, at least 2 people came back from the dead that I'm aware of, and
say,
I didn't watch it.
Pretty sure Harold came back from the dead. And Dee came back from the dead. But it started on Channel 7 and was axed.
Oh, that's right. It did, didn't it?
Went to 10.
And it had...
I bet Channel 7 was pissed off.
A different Scott. Darius Perkins played Scott. Scott Robinson back then, and then he was recast when it went to 10 and Jason Donovan got that gig. But Darius Perkins, who's a brilliant actor, passed away, I think, last year, sadly. Mm. And it was great on Channel 7, and I watched it right from the very first day on Channel 7. And then when they killed it, I was like, no. And the Channel 10 went, oh, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
I mean, they had like half a table of people at the Logies last night. You've got Alan Fletcher and Jackie Woodburn, Carl and Susan, who've been on that show for centuries. They weren't original cast. Stephen Dennis is the only original cast member left. But and even he went away for a few years.
But wasn't there the whole time, was he?
No, yeah, he went away to release a really bad single in the UK and have babies with one of the twins. What were their names?
Oh, I don't know.
I forget. Christina and somebody else.
Now,
do they have a gay couple at the moment?
Yes, they did.
They do. They got married. They had their first gay wedding.
Yes.
There you go.
There you go.
They've also got their first transgender character.
That's right. Oh. Yes.
Yeah.
But still not a person of colour.
Oh. They've got, I think the closest they're getting to people of colour, if they count them that way, is Asians, and they made the Asian gay.
Yeah.
So they kind of killed two birds.
Tick all the boxes with them.
We need a gay. All right, Asian.
We'll have a person of colour, but they're happy.
Do you know, when I was in London, before I was coming to Australia, I watched Home and Away and Neighbours on the BBC. And I was amazed at Melbourne, because I was actually planning to live in Melbourne. And I was looking at Neighbours and I thought, because I lived in London and there's black people, there's people from all over the world. And I thought, there's only white people in Melbourne. What's going on with that?
There's only white people on TV in Melbourne. Yeah. Back in the 80s.
That's the way it wasn't it?
No, wasn't it?
Well, it's only white people. What's the name of the suburb? Is it Erinsborough or something?
Yeah,
Erinsborough, which is otherwise known as Nunawading.
That's a particularly white suburb, apparently.
So white. Like,
noticeably white.
It's bleached.
I guess we must move on in a second, but I just want to mention that there is talk, folks, that some famous people will appear in the last episode in early August. Famous people, you know, like the people you've been mentioning. Will Kylie make it? Will Jason make it?
She's been filmed. Jason didn't. Guy Pearce did.
Oh.
Craig
McLaughlin?
Probably not.
I don't think so. As much as I love Henry Ramsey, I think that might be a... Although, they can't be any more on the nose. They're cancelled. So they could have. They could have rolled Henry out, I guess.
You know, one of my funny memories of Neighbours over the years, it was when Kylie and Jason... Well, their characters married, and they released that awful song, especially.
Angry Anderson. Their song, their duet.
That was awful.
No, their duet.
Especially for You was the worst.
Oh, and it used to be on the sides of buses in Sydney, and this was before mobile phones, and so you could ring up a number and listen to the song on your phone.
Yes.
How much did that cost?
It was.
It must have cost
a fortune. I have no idea. I never did it. But,
Video, if you watch the video, that's all on location in St Kilda.
Right, yeah.
Right by the foreshore.
Truly, truly
Rachel, I'm just wondering if you were asked to do a cameo since you were on Neighbours yourself.
Oh, no. God, no. I was completely forgettable in Neighbours. I don't think they even remember
I'm who joking.
I was.
Joking.
That's what I was going to say.
Neighbors, everybody needs good neighbors, just a friendly wave each morning helps to make a better day. Neighbors need to get to know each other. Next door is only a footstep away. Neighbors, everybody needs good neighbors. With a perfect blend. Neighbors should be there for one another. That's when good neighbors become good friends. Next door is only a footstep away. Everybody needs good neighbors with a little understanding. You can find the perfect blend. Neighbors should be there for one another. That's when good neighbors become good friends. That's when good neighbors become good friends.
With 21 correspondents in 7 countries from around the world, this is Bondi Tunes International.
Okay, now we're 17 minutes and 50 seconds into this interview, and we've just talked about the Logies and Neighbours. we've talked about nothing.
Something's never changed.
Yes. I want to mention,
when we don't plan stuff.
By the way, I just saw on the news today, since we're talking about entertainment, Billy Joel is coming to Australia. But he's only coming for one day.
Yeah. Well, he's a busy guy.
Who goes from America to Australia for one day to do a gig? It's bizarre.
I can only imagine somebody who's paid a bucket load of money to do it. Yeah.
Yes.
And I assume he's only here for the one night because he's so busy planning his no new music that is not released.
His no new music.
Yes, that's right. He's absolutely no new music. But he's very tired. He only has to gig one time a year, and he's chosen to do it at the MCG.
And God knows what age he is. Now, if you've just joined us,
even the family will get a free holiday in Australia for doing that one night's work. So,
he was with Christy Brinkley, wasn't he?
Yeah, a long time.
And someone said to me, rather unfairly, I thought, towards him, they said, it's the ugliest man in the world with the most beautiful woman in the world. Is that...
Look at Mick Jagger. He did all right, too.
He did. Okay, now, if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Rachel Brunson, our entertainment reporter in Melbourne, and Adam Devlin, our Australian political correspondent in Brisbane. He really is in Brisbane. I just want to bring up something that shocked me today on the news here in Australia. The Aboriginal flag is being hoisted on the Sydney Harbour Bridge at the cost of $25 million. Why? Mm-hmm. Why is it
costing? It's a big hoist, Henry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fabric in that flag.
Also, what they're doing, when I first heard this, I thought, $25 million just to put a flag up there? That's ridiculous. What's going on? But what it is, there are two flagpoles up there at the moment. One, it has the Australian flag on it, the national flag of Australia, and the other one, predominantly most of the year, has the New South Wales state flag on it. And they changed the state flag over to the Aboriginal flag on days of Indigenous significance. And so what they're doing is they're going to put a third flagpole up. And it's a 6-story flagpole they're putting up. And so it'll be in the middle of the bridge because the state flag and the national flag are on the outside of the bridge. So in between them, in the middle, will be this new flagpole, which will have the Indigenous flag on it. So that's the big part of the cost is a one-off cost, and that's actually getting the flagpole built and up there and in place.
That takes some engineering. But do you know what I keep picturing in my head, though? You know when they have those whoopsies photographs of, like, trees that have been planted on a road and the council paints around them?
Yes.
Have you seen those? That's what I'm thinking of when they're putting this flagpole in the middle of the bridge.
Well, you know, Rach, off air I said I'd do it for $25 and you said I'd do it for 25 cents.
25 cents worth of mixed lollies, which is not very many mixed lollies now. But I would. I totally would.
And the flags
like
that are up there.
You've got to engineer that stuff. Like, it's an engineering nightmare.
Yeah.
So I get, okay. But I still, $25 million is still a lot of money.
It's an awful lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But these flags only last about a year before they need to be replaced. And they're huge flags as well. You know, they take a battering up there.
They do.
I guess they do, yeah. I never thought about that. And they are huge. Mm. They have to be huge, don't they?
Absolutely, because they've got to be visible from so far away. Yeah, so you know, the $25 million to get it up there, and then you know, it won't be that each year after that. It's that's a one-off cost of, as I said, the getting of the flagpole and everything, engineered, built, designed, put up there. But it still will be millions a year to have this Aboriginal flag flying there.
And it is important. So what? It is important,
yeah,
isn't it?
And so what? Exactly. Yeah. Okay. We've got money for everything else in this country, so it's about time we had some money to recognise the Indigenous.
And talking about money for people, I guess we better switch to politics at this point, or else it's not going to happen. We have a new Prime Minister, a new government in this country of Australia, and it's been about a month since they got in. As we were talking, Adam, when I was really sick last week, thank you for covering for me. There's talk, Anthony Albanese is outlining major plans. Now, Parliament is going back into session soon, isn't it?
It is. Parliament sits at the end of July. July 26th is the first sitting of the new Parliament with the new government. So that will be an exciting day for me. And already he's outlined three of the main things that he wants to talk about or wants to do first up. Well, four things, really. They're doing a budget in, I think it's in August, or it could be October, and that will be a brand new budget, federal budget. So that will kill off a lot of the rubbish that went on with the federal, with the previous government, and will start prioritising their own agenda, which is a great thing to see. So what are they doing? First thing they'll be doing is changing our climate targets, to lift it from the 26 to 28% of the previous government up to 40% by 2030. Widely already announced, widely applauded around the world. And it just goes to show, you know, the only thing stopping this happening previously was politics.
Over 9 years of the Liberal.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they've ticked that one off. That's done. Then the other thing that they want to do fairly straight up is set up a new employment and training body. Basically, Rachel, you'd certainly remember this. Henry, you may. But Centrelink, or the Dole, used to be, you used to go there to look for jobs. If you needed a job, you would go to the local office.
I've done it.
The CES, man.
And the CES. And they had the Commonwealth Employment Service. And they had boards of all jobs on them. And you could go through, pick the job you wanted, and then go over to the counter and talk to the people about it. And they'd organise an interview for you. And, you know, none of that happens anymore. It was all offloaded years ago to third-party employment services that the government pay for them to find jobs.
Seek and those kind of people?
Not so much Sikh. No. Mostly they're religious organizations.
It's usually Anglican employment services.
Really?
Places like that.
And so what the government wants to do is bring all that back in house again, so that, you know, there's one central place where you go, and you know, they can coordinate training for you, to get you on the path to the career you want, and they will also have jobs again. So you can go back into Centrelink and actually look for a job.
like it used to be.
You used to go and use their computers and do your CV, and, you know, then you'd see they'd posted, you know, stuff on the, I mean, back in the olden days, they would post things on the board, and then with the advent of the World Wide Webs, you could actually just sit there on a website and their website and look at the jobs you wanted, and then you print it out and you go to the counter and you say, I'm interested in these jobs, and then they tick it off that you were there and you tried your very best, and then they allow you to have your payment, your Dole payment, and then off you would go. But invariably, you would end up with a job.
Yeah. I just want to mention that, you know, when I was in the Dole in the mid-90s, I was living in a country town. I couldn't get a job. And you may remember that, you know, the Work for the Dole thing and the Dole bludgers, that big news. But I actually taught myself how to do web design while I was on the Dole in the country. Here's a funny thing. There's a young guy, I think he's in Brisbane, actually. You know the way they ask you to look for 12 jobs? I think it's 12 jobs, and you have to report those 12 jobs. He's created a bot or a kind of an app where it files through thousands of records and creates applications for 12 jobs in 30 seconds. And he just sends it. He said, I've just broken the system. What do you think of that, guys?
Oh, look, it's...
There's always a way around it.
Yeah, mutual obligation is what they call this, where you have to show that you're actively job hunting. And I thought it was 20 in a fortnight, so it was basically...
Yeah.
But whatever it is, you have to prove that you're actually applying for jobs.
Yes.
Now, from an employer's perspective, this is awful, because every time we advertise for employees, we get flooded with resumes and applications that you can tell by looking at it that they're not the least bit interested in the job. They're just applying because they need to be able to say that they've applied for jobs.
Yeah.
It's really bad, isn't it? Because you're not doing the thing for the right reasons, isn't that right?
No. I mean, it's one of those situations where it's, at first thoughts, it sounds like a decent idea. Oh, well, we'll just make these people, you know, if they're not going for interviews, they're not going to get a job. So if we force them to go for interviews, then they will eventually get a job. So the concept is, I understand where the concepts come from, but as most things that are looked through a political ideological eye, they've weaponized it. And
100%.
It's now at the point where it's a punishment for you being on the dole. And business hates it because, as I said, you've got to apply for, you've got to put a job ad out because you need staff. And then, you know, it's not uncommon when we advertise and I go through the resumes for the company I do some other work with, a basic customer service type role, it's not uncommon for us to get 250 plus applicants.
Hmm. Are they all real applicants, Adam?
No.
They're all phony applicants.
They're real people, but they're not the least bit interested. Right, they're not the least bit interested in the job. And and you can tell it from the application, just because it's so badly written. They're usually full of mistakes and errors. Yeah,
probably purposely.
often they've got like a cover letter where they don't even bother to personalize it to that job application. So quite often it's got a completely different title of that. In the application letter to the job they're applying for, full of spelling errors, and you can just tell by looking at it that this person has zero interest in applying for this job. So they're wasting their time where they could be actually finding a job that they want, and business is being bombarded with all of these
and you have to sift applications through it because you have to sift through it and it's ridiculous. And but that person has just sent that thing off to meet a criteria.
Tick a box.
They've done it.
Yeah.
But so, the effort that goes into pretending you were job hunting, if you were actually job hunting, you could
take
rule
less
the
effort
world.
To get a job.
It'd be less.
It would take less effort to get a job.
Less work. Less work. I just want to mention now, in the last 2 years, we've had a pandemic, of course, and we still have it, but no one's talking about it. And it's interesting that, especially in cities like Sydney and Melbourne, big cities, and Brisbane, these cafes are closing down. They can't get staff. So this is a really interesting juxtaposition, if you like, where people are unemployed, but people are desperately needed, to work in cafes, face-to-face jobs, as against working from home,
The other thing too is that in Melbourne, I know for sure, because everybody was forced to work from home and then because it took them such a long time to start coming back to the city to work, there's no foot traffic.
Yes.
So it's been crippling for businesses in the CBD here. It's been really disastrous, and they've only just started to come back now.
Yeah.
To their offices only just in the last like month. So
Brisbane,
I was going to ask you about Brisbane.
Literally every cafe I walk past in this city has a sign out the front on the window saying staff needed desperately.
Why are they having problems? I'm a bit confused about this.
Because a lot of these, particularly service jobs like retail, working in cafes, things like that, a lot of those, I mean, let's face it, for the vast majority of people who do those jobs, it's not a career, it's a job. And so a lot of those jobs used to be filled by people traveling, transient people from overseas
people, yes.
Yep.
Yeah, international students.
People in college, yeah.
Yep, people would come out here on a gap year and with a working visa, and so they would work 6 months in a city somewhere and then take off and travel around Australia. Queensland, Brisbane, is a fairly big touristy place, and so a lot of tourists would come through here and they would work on their way through. Now, anyone overseas who's saying, I don't want to get COVID, they're not coming to Australia at the moment, because we're one of the worst countries in the world for COVID at the moment. So we're just not getting the people coming into the country that used to come in to do these jobs. And so the people who have lost work, who have, in inverted commas, careers, they're not going to go from being a department manager or something in another, in a business, or, having a trade or whatever. They're not going to go back and start working in a cafe.
Do you think people have changed their skill sets? Because if they're afraid, like, for the people, I'm not necessarily talking about the people who are travelling in from overseas, or young people, students, that sort of thing. But people who did this job seriously, since COVID, have they changed their skill sets so they don't have to do a job in a place? You know what I mean? They could do another job from home. Do you think that's something part of that?
Well, also, there's a massive shift with people, where people live, happening as well during the pandemic in Australia, as there was around the world.
Small towns.
Sydney and Melbourne, particularly, for the first time in a living memory, they actually saw their populations decrease.
Everybody left.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. And, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide have gone up in population, but a lot of the regions have also gone up. So it's just a case of, and you have to couple this with the great global resignation that's going on at the moment.
And it is, yes.
And it is. It's global. Like, it's all over the Western world. People are just saying, and I think this is a result of the pandemic. They're going, you know what? If life is this precarious, and we're going to have to, I want to do something that I actually really want to do. And so they are making those changes. They are going, I had 2 years, not me personally, but they're saying, I've got 2 years where we couldn't go on a holiday or anything. I've got all this money here. Why don't I retrain and we can move somewhere start a whole new life?
Lots of money. Rachel, I just want to ask Rachel, you lived in the capital city, Canberra, for I don't know how long, a year or so?
18 months.
And you moved back to Melbourne and you got your job back, which is, I know it's a different job, but you're working for the same company. Do you consider that lucky? If you didn't, do you feel confident that you would have got a job?
No.
Oh.
I think it would have been hard. It was hard in Canberra. And I think I don't think it's lucky as much as I was kind of a bit, I rang the general manager because he and I are good mates, and I said, I'm not asking, I'm telling you, I'm coming back, make some room. And they did. I happened to be quite good at that job, so they were.
I'm sure you are.
Back.
I mean, I worked with you at TNT. You were spectacularly good, even though you were very ill and very young at the time.
I was, but I know that business really well, and I'm a handy person to have with a lot of historical knowledge of how it works and how you never forget it. So I was just really lucky. But in Canberra, I found it very difficult to get work because of my age.
I'd hate to be looking for a job now because I'm 59. I turned 60 in 2 weeks' time. In fact, one week time from, and I was just saying to myself, actually, just watching a lot of media as I do, I'm thinking, who the hell is going to employ me at the age of 60? 5 years from what apparently is retirement, And it's true. They're so ageist. Employment agencies
very
are dreadfully ageist.
In the ACT, ageist. They were supremely ageist. And, they're not saying it to you, but that's what's going on. For example,
well, they can't say it
I applied
to you,
for
they?
A job.
They can't say it, no.
No, they can't. I applied for a job in the same industry that I'm in now, and I've got 30 years' experience in that industry. So I wasn't even getting a phone call.
God.
And I know that that's for one of two reasons. Either I'm too old or they think I'm too experienced and don't want to pay me.
That's a very good point. That's a very
not
good
knowing
point.
That I would have been happy to take terrible money just to have something to do and somewhere to go.
Yeah, Adam. Mm. Back in the 90s, you know, when being gay was not exactly accepted, when you were going for jobs as a gay person, did they know you were gay? Did you say you were gay? And if you did they? Obviously, they couldn't say we can't employ you, but did that affect you at all?
Look, what I used to do, Henry, and I probably, if I find myself in an interview situation in the future at some point, I'll probably do it again, is I wait until an offer is made, or at least a second interview, so that I know that they're considering me.
Mm.
And then at that point, I will say, by the way, I'm just letting you know that I'm a gay man, openly gay. You know, my partner is my partner. I speak about my partner as any heterosexual person would speak about their partner. And I'm as open as any heterosexual person is with their partner in a work environment. So I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm gay. So if that's a problem for your organization, you need to let me know now so I can withdraw.
Very good point. But Adam, they can do the same with ageism.
Absolutely.
As against sexism or whatever your gender, you know, whatever, even, you know, there's been a lot of talk about in sports lately about transgender people, men, you know, transgendering to women, and the fact that their muscles are stronger, and there's a lot of that stuff going on. But just getting back to you, you will tell them that you're gay, but can they not do the same trick with being gay as the ageism thing?
Absolutely. And look, there have been jobs where I thought I had a chance of getting the job, and I've told them I'm gay, and then all of a sudden I've been dropped from the shortlist.
Really?
Now, I can't prove that was because I was gay or told them that I was gay.
No.
But I can absolutely, on a couple of occasions that it's happened, the communication style certainly changed the moment I mentioned I was gay.
Mm.
Now, would that happen today? I don't think so. I think it's
a lot less.
Much more open society now. It's
it's also illegal. You know, I mean, just like ageism.
Yeah, it is illegal. Yeah. And but also being gay is much more commonplace now. It's much more in the open media
Adam,
than
it
used to be.
If it were me, I'd be running in there the first interview and go, "Hi, I'm Rachel and I'm gay.
I'm a lesbian." Shouted from the rooftops.
If I'm next in an interview, I'll try that, Rachel. I'll run in and go, "Hi, I'm Rachel, and I'm gay."
Okay. Yeah, just that's the first thing.
My name's Rachel Bernstein and I'm gay.
I'm Rachel Bernstein in Brisbane.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
Henry O'Donovan.
Another topic to cover. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Adam Devlin in Brisbane and Rachel Bernstein in Melbourne. Okay, it's Rachel Bernstein. This is going to go on forever, I've got to tell you. I can't wait to see you on television in Britain again and see how they pronounce your name, Rachel Bernstein. One final thing to talk about. We've talked about the new government, and now we're going to have a chat about the opposition government, if you like. Peter Dutton.
Bless.
Tell us, Adam, I haven't checked this out. Tell me about Angus Taylor and Peter Dutton shirking responsibility on the energy crisis despite a decade of government inaction, I would say.
Mm. Yes. Well, just for our international listeners, over the last week or so here in Australia, we've had an energy crisis where the government had to step in and basically take control of the privatised electricity market because this huge spike in gas prices because of the war in Ukraine.
Yes.
And about 25% of our coal power stations are offline at the moment because they are not working. They've just been so neglected over the years that they no longer work. Pardon me. Mm. And we don't have a national gas reservation policy in place. Now, a national gas reservation policy is something like Western Australia has in place at a state level, where 15% of all the gas in WA that is generated in WA or mined in WA has to be kept in WA for the local market. And so, and that's at the local market prices.
Which is a
good
thing.
So what happened was, Yeah, absolutely. And what happened was, a few years ago, we opened up our gas export market, and we had two markets in place. We had a domestic gas market and we had an international gas market. Now, the international gas market was generating probably about 200% more in revenue than the local market. And so the industry went to the government and said, well, we want to charge the international price for the local supplies. Mm. And the government said, sure, go for it. And so that's why we've now seen this huge spike in pricing for gas. Mm. We got to the point over the weekend and late last week where it looked like Sydney, Melbourne and Adelaide could have been without electricity.
Yes.
Basically, to stop that from happening, the government had to basically take over the industry and just demand that these producers produce electricity, because some of them were trying to game the system. They were going, well, if we don't produce enough, then the prices will go up and we'll make more money.
It's price gouging, isn't it?
Absolutely. And this is why essential services like electricity should not be privatized. Now, over the weekend, both the previous minister, Angus Taylor, and the previous, the now leader of the Liberal Party.
I have a word for him that we can't
say. Yeah, and you'll notice I had to stop myself, but yes.
Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah, that'll be the one.
They both, on the weekend, gave interviews where they shirked responsibility, took no responsibility for the current state that the electricity grid in this country is in, and it's only in this state because they did nothing for 10 years about it.
Yeah.
They knew that it was all. They knew that these gas, these coal-fired power stations were going mm-hmm. to their use-by date was coming.
Yeah,
they did nothing to transition to anything else. They opened up the domestic gas market to international pricing, which means that we're all paying a lot more than we used to pay. Mm. And they did nothing. They did everything they could to stop investment into renewables. And so we've got this situation now where the old grid is broken. It essentially no longer is fit for purpose. But because nothing's been done for 10 years, there's nothing to replace it with.
Yes.
And anything that we try and replace it with takes time.
Absolutely. You can't undo 10 years of neglect just by, in one day, flick a switch and say, oh, we'll fix that problem.
You can't try it with your hair.
Exactly. Can't. Yeah. And even still, they're going on about, I heard them on the weekend saying, well, solar's no good at night. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God, and the earth's flat too, Dingus.
Do you only get water out of your tap when it's raining?
Yeah.
We have this thing called storage. Dear. You can store energy. You can store the water. You can, these people are insane. It's ideology gone mad. And they've backed themselves into this corner where, because they get most of their donations from the fossil fuels industries, they can't come out and say, well, now we're going to support renewables. Mm. And so all of a sudden they've got themselves in this pickle where the whole country knows we have to move away from coal and is prepared to do that. We voted the government
As we said last week on this broadcast, Adam, these businesses are actually asking.
Yes, that's right.
They're asking.
And so we've just got this lost opposition now, stuck in the past, with all of these debts to pay to the coal industry because the coal industry is funding them. And yet the rest of the country is saying, well, that's, 50-year-old technology. We don't want that anymore. We voted them out of office over this issue predominantly.
Yes.
And now they're coming out and saying, well, none of the problems here are our fault. It's like, hang on a minute. That's just a bit rich. You can't have been there for 10 years and then take no responsibility for the situation that we find ourselves in.
Okay, now we
because this didn't happen, the unravelling of our electricity grid did not happen in the last 3 weeks since the election.
No, it happened in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Before we go, I just want to mention something which relates to our entertainment reporter, Rachel Burnson. I promise you I'll get over this next week.
I may never.
I'm never ever going to. That's it. I'm going to default tomorrow. I'm changing it.
Elton John appeared in Liverpool, England at a gig at the weekend, and my friend M, who lives in Liverpool, went to see it, and he paid £300. Now, that's $600, I do believe, yeah. Australian. And he left after the fifth song because, and I thought, and I asked him, this is all on text, I said, why did you leave? Was it because of bad sound? Could you not see Elton John on the stage? Of course, he's on a big screen. And he said, no, it wasn't that. It's because for a start, he didn't get up. He said he's probably getting old and didn't want to get up and stand up at any point. He just sat at his piano. The second thing was, he said that Elton John just spruiked all his new music. Now, my thinking is, Rod Stewart, actually, I saw interviewed recently on TV, and he said, no, I just play all my old songs when I do a concert. Mm. Elton John did not, and M was really pissed off about this. And he said it cost me $300 a song before I left, £300 a song before he left. Is it unfair for icons like Elton John to just spruik their new music?
I don't think it's unfair at all. I mean, they still want to sell new music. They still want to make new
music.
But don't
people who go to these gigs want to hear all the big hits?
Then stay at home and listen to your CD, man. Like, you know, chuck your vinyl on. And these people make music every day, new music every day, and they don't. It's imagine if you. If we went back to the first episode of this show, very first one we ever did together.
That could be dangerous.
And we just kept doing that over and over and over again. No, we like to make new content. Okay. We want to make new stuff. So when you go out and you play for people, play your new music.
Adam? Yeah.
Also, I guarantee that if he had stuck around, Elton would have played some of his older songs.
He did. He played... He played Yellow Brick Road at the end.
there you go.
You know, people like Elton John, Rod Stewart, you know, there's a whole bunch of these...
they call them rinky old stars.
essentially greatest hits to acts now, that they've been around for so long and they've had so many hits and so many people know them and love them that we expect them to play what we want. Mm. Now, if they've got new music out, they want to play the new music because they must be so bored with playing your song and Crocodile Rock for the last 50 years.
Oh, my gosh,
So it's that fine balancing act. Now, somebody who does this incredibly well is my all-time favourite, Olivia Newton-John. She's a greatest hits performer. Like, people only want to hear the hits, essentially.
Yes.
And yet, so she knows that. She gets that every time she tours. About... bit over half of the set of the show is old stuff, is the hits. And then she will do a few of the new, and she will do a few songs that aren't off the new album and aren't old hits, just stuff that she, just to break it up for her.
Yeah, and I think, Adam...
But she comes out starting with a hit, and she ends with hits, and in the middle there's a mix of stuff. And that's the way to do it.
I think the dribbling of the classics plus the new content seems the balance.
Mm. I saw Culture Club. The first time I saw Culture Club in concert was in Melbourne a couple of years ago. And they came on, they had a new album out, and they came on, and their first three songs were off the new album, which hadn't actually been released at that time in Australia.
Mm.
And... I took my partner with me, and we were sitting there, and the buzz in the crowd before they came on was, you could feel the excitement in the air. By the third song, everyone was like on their phones, talking to each other, like moving around. The whole atmosphere had died because we didn't know the songs they were playing. Mm. Now, the fourth song was Karma Chameleon, and everyone was up on their feet, and so they got us back.
Yes.
But, you know... You don't, if you're one of these artists that are touring based on your hits from the 80s and 90s and 70s, don't start your concerts now with your new material because they're not, we'll listen to it, absolutely, but get us on Beside first. Give us a couple of hits of Sugar of your old hits that we love, that we're there for, and then throw a couple of new ones in. Then you can even talk about the album, and you know, we've got more chance of listening to it at that point. But yeah, it's bad form, I think, for any sort of established artist to open with new music. It's
okay. Look, we got to go. It's lovely talking to you both. I love talking to you guys together because you're both completely insane, just like me.
Yes.
And it's always a lot of fun. Thank you, Rachel Brunston and Adam Devlin.
Who's that? For
joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
If it's like you, I'm a grave.
Henry O'Donovan.